Off the Ball Daily.
This interview with you and I can go any way you want it to go. You can ask me any question you want. Nobody from my PR team is ever going to call somebody from the media and say, don't ask Dana this.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
This is Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Daniel Whiffen, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm never going to get tired watching back that stuff and looking back at that glorious week in Paris. Have you luxuriated in it just yet? Did you go back and look at any of that stuff?
No, not really. Honestly, I kind of saw it all when it was coming out. I was on my phone quite a bit during the Olympics, especially after the 800 free. And I had a look through and I saw all the different interviews. And then I obviously saw the ones of my parents and all the ones that I did myself. And I mean, it was a great week. And I'm happy it's finished now and that I can kind of relax.
And get back to normal life? Or will life ever be normal again?
I don't think it'll ever be normal again, sadly. I think I'm struggling at the moment to walk down the street without being stopped like 50 times. So it's going to be, I think it might be a while until it calms down, but I'm leaving tomorrow. So I'm going to holidays soon. So maybe after I come back from holidays, it'll be a bit calmer.
How annoying is it for Nathan? I'm sure as a doppelganger, I mean, when he's walking down the street and they're like, oh, Daniel, hey, give us an autograph.
I don't think he's annoyed by it, but I think he just gets frustrated because, do you know a funny story? So I was doing the 10K in the Seine and people are coming up to Nathan while he's spectating the 10K asking, oh, Daniel, can I have a photo? And Nathan's like, he's in the water. He's clearly racing and they're coming up to him. But I think he's taken more selfies than I have, honestly. He did a lot of the work in Paris when he was out and about. So thanks to him for taking them away from me.
You had a swim camp in Enniskillen over the last few days. Is that right?
Yeah, we've been doing, we did two swim camps for, I think it was 10 to 17 years old. So we did them over this just Saturday and Sunday past.
I presume they were massively oversubscribed. Like, you've been advertising this for months and then you go and become one of the most recognisable Irish sports people ever. And I presume that you barely could, or the capacity must have massively oversubscribed.
Yeah, I think it sold out pretty, it sold to 80% in 20 minutes when we released it. And then it was full. I don't know the actual stats, but after 20 minutes of releasing it, it sold to 80%. And then it was very full. We had like 100 swimmers in total for across the weekend. So it's quite a lot. And I had a lot of fun. Did like 4 hours a day of just talking about swimming and help teaching younger children. So it was quite fun.
Was that always something that you were interested in, irrespective of whether or not you reached the levels that you always knew you were capable of? But that part of being a coach and paying it forward, because Reece McLennan, one of the very first things he said was, I'm taking this medal to every gym in the country. I'm sure he's going to regret that eventually when he's at his 400th gym. But from your perspective, was being a coach and teaching kids how to swim always part of your plan anyway?
Honestly, I've never wanted to be a coach or a swim teacher or anything like that. But the reason why I did the swim clinics was because so many people asked for them. Like, I would never have thought to do any because I didn't really feel a need. But then every child, I think, wanted to see what Olympic champion does and wanted to hear me speak and wanted to hear my opinions on how they should swim fast freestyle. So I think it was like a no-brainer then after the Olympics. Well, on the lead-up to Olympics, I knew I was going to win and I was already double world champ, world record holder, triple European champ going into it. So I was like, yeah, we'll just do this, have a go, see what it's like. But I don't know if it's going to be any more. I just have to find the time because I'm still in full training, obviously. I'm only 23 and I've got another at least two Olympic cycles on my radar. So we'll have to see what happens in the future.
Yeah, well, you know, some of the swimmers in the 10K were actually quite old. So you could have 3 or 4 Olympics on your radar if you wanted.
Yeah, well, I mean, my goal has always been to be a four-time Olympian. I've always wanted to go to, I want to try to do an Olympics on every continent. I don't know if there's going to be an African Olympics, but we will see. And we'll see what happens, I guess. I meant for the next Olympic cycles and 4 in total, where I'm actually going to be in the physical shape to still contend for medals.
Right, okay. That's what I meant. Yeah, fair enough.
The ones after that, I doubt when I'm 36, I'm going to be swimming 1500s, to be honest.
Maybe the 10K though, right?
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I have retired from the event, so we'll see.
We weren't sure if that was an official retirement or an immediate aftermath. I feel so sick, I'm never doing that again. And that maybe after passage of time, you're like, actually, you know what? I quite enjoyed that, but maybe not.
Well, I put it in this perspective as, so they're interviewing me 2 minutes as soon as I get out of the water after not speaking for 2 hours. If you think about it as if you've just done a hard run and or like a normal training session and it's really intensive and then the interview is 1 minute after you've just finished, you're probably going to tell everybody you're not going to do it again. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I will do it again. But at the moment, I've got no plans.
You got pretty sick after that. Was that automatically put down to the quality of the water in the Seine, or was it just sheer exhaustion? Did you find out?
You can never put it down to like 100% of what it was, but they're pretty sure it was from the water. But to be honest, who knows? I'm happy it's over. So
you missed out on carrying the flag at the closing ceremony, which obviously you'd said straight away you were mad keen to do. So is that the only disappointment from your time at the Olympics?
To be honest, I won't even call it that much of a disappointment. It was obviously a great honour to carry the flag, and I was pestering Gavin nearly every day to make sure I could do it. That was our chef de mission. But I'm hopefully pretty sure. I think if I keep saying that I can carry the flag in LA, then they might eventually let me do it. I'm also swimming in the second week now, so it makes it a lot easier for us swimmers to go to the opening ceremony. So I actually think it's better to carry the flag on the opening ceremony than the closing, because I feel like more people will watch the opening ceremony than the closing. So I think it's going to be a fun event, hopefully, if I get to carry it there in the next Olympics.
What does the intervening period between now and LA actually look like? Because you've got a rivalry with the 1500 meter winner, and that's the type of thing that like the whole country can kind of tune into and get behind you versus Fink, like over the next 3.5-4 years, assuming he continues all the way to LA, because I think he's only 26, 27, so we should expect to see him a good bit.
24,
right.
Yeah, to be honest, we'll see what happens, you know. I feel like American Olympians seem to change all the time because they always have such new talent coming up, some younger guys. And well, I'd love to race Bobby. I mean, we're great competitors and we push each other, and long live our rivalry, I guess. But it's not just him, you know, there's like 7 people at the moment who all go at the same time in the 1500. So it's really just like a massive race to see who can get the hand on the wall first. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And the next couple of years is going to be very fun and a lot of good races.
But from your perspective, do you focus on the 1500 for the next year and a half, or do you do 8 and 1500 interchangeably? Does it matter which you train for?
Training's basically the same. I think it's just on how I feel, honestly. Like for the 800s, you need a lot of like easy speed, so you can go out fast, because I mean, I'm repping near my 403 PB when I'm doing it. And it's just like, keep it up, honestly. I mean, just keep up the easy speed, but that kind of just comes with taper. So I feel like in the 1500, you can do them both equally as good as each other. It's just, I think at the Olympics, I was quite wrecked going into the 1500. I've been thinking back on it and some of the stuff that happened and all the stuff I did in between the races. I probably would change a couple of things to make sure I was in full 100% shape. But I gave it my best and I got a bronze medal, so I can't complain.
I know, 100%. That's the whole point of these things, isn't it? You have to live them to learn the experience. Would you just talk us through a little bit of what you're talking about there in terms of, is that just like the emotional high and dealing with it, and then some of the commitments that you now have because people want your time, or what are you talking about?
Yeah, I just did quite a lot of media the next day, and then I didn't get to bed till late, and I wish I slept a bit more, honestly, after my race. I probably got about 4 hours the next day because I just couldn't sleep. And then I would have just stayed the whole day in bed, honestly, and just try to rest. And then in terms of training, that was perfect. I didn't need to change anything about that. But then also in terms of I obviously love swimming, so I like to go watch it. And I want to especially watch all the Irish athletes. But at some stage, you need to really kind of be selfish, because I remember the day I only went to watch, I didn't get to watch Mona's final because I was preparing in between the heats and finals. And then after the next day, after the final, I went and watched Tom Fallon's 50 freestyle. semi, and I was just like, I think I got to bed at 1 a.m. then the next day as well. So I think it was just affecting my sleep. But I kind of like have to find a good balance because I really like to watch, and I obviously want to watch my friends who race. So maybe next time I'll have to think about different ways. But we'll see. Hopefully the racing's not on as late, so maybe they could change that a bit.
Your pre-race bits, Daniel, you know, they write it in the history books, and like also the stuff that my kids were doing when we were watching the stuff when we were on holidays, the phone and landing in the pool afterwards. Is that stuff, how far in advance are you coming up with that stuff?
I knew the writing of the history books. I would say 4 months. I knew I was going to do that one. I do think about them quite a lot, like in training. People give me ideas too, and Nathan will give me some ideas. But the writing history books one I was always going to do. And then I didn't really have one for the 1500. I kind of just ran out of things to do. So I just did the W. I guess months ahead maybe. And then sometimes it's on the day. It's really dependent on... if I think of something in my head, then I'll write it down. If not, then I'll just think about it in the call room, maybe, of what I'm going to do.
The other thing I wondered about it was, like, that. So there's a confidence, there's a flamboyance about it that you maybe not necessarily always associate with Irish sport or Irish sports people. I mean, there's almost a confrontational aspect to it. Potentially you're throwing down a bit of a gauntlet to competitors. Is that something that is like latter-day Daniel Whiffen, or were you at the under-14 Armagh Championships and that's the way you're going about your business?
I only started doing those walkouts in December of this season, so 2023 December. And the reason why I just started doing them, because I was getting quite nervous in the call rooms walking out into these big crowds. So I was like, if I just focus on doing a walkout instead of focusing on how fast I'm going to swim, it's going to distract me, and then I won't think about it too much and then overthink it. So the walkouts were really just there as like a technique to stop overthinking. And I mean, they're working at the moment, especially. I'm like pretty much winning every time I've done them, apart from one race where I came third. But it's been pretty good. So they're just used as like a technique.
Did your sports psychologist help you come up with that, or was that something you decided to like break it down into? How do you go on? Sorry.
I don't like sports psychologists, actually. I'm not a big fan of them. In terms of how I work, I just don't think they work well with me. Every athlete's individual. So I just find that they tell you to think of different scenarios, like what happens if you do lose or something like that. What how are you going to cope with that? And I'm like, well, I'm just not going to lose. That's what I just say. So that would be how I work. But I know every athlete's individual, so some work on them, some don't. But I just choose that I think they're a waste of time, personally. So,
well, that's really interesting that you have come up with a trick to stop yourself getting nervous by focusing on something micro in the immediate moment that you can fix or influence. And that it seems like it's a usual sports psychologist trick, but you've obviously just come up with it yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I tried a different sports psychology set over the years, and none of them seemed to work well with what I wanted to do. And a lot of them, well, I think my last one I had told me I didn't need a sports psychologist because they said I'm borderline delusional, that I can just believe something that maybe isn't necessarily true. But I just have that self-belief in myself, and it's like, if I say I'm going to win the Olympics, I'm going to win the Olympics, and I'll make sure that everybody knows it. And but it's just a bit of fun, honestly. Like it's maybe you can call it false confidence, I don't know, because I'm literally in the call room and I could tell everybody in the race that I'm gonna win and then go and do it. It's not like I'm using it as like I don't actually believe. I just actually believe that much of myself that I can tell you months in advance that I'm gonna win.
When they called you borderline delusional, were you like, thanks very much?
Well, people was like, do you not take offense to that? And I was like, no, it just means I'm a good athlete.
Yeah, I mean, it was, because you obviously knew that you had the talent that was going to take you to this level. You did say that you were a bit nervous coming out for the 800, and that bit about hearing Nathan's voice. Can you just talk us through that bit where you've done the writing in the history books? Is it after that that you hear the voice?
So you walk out, and you're all lined up behind these, like a border, kind of like a wall. And then you walk out through this archway, and then I walk out when you see the flag come up, and then walk into the like chair. It's probably about like 10, 15 meters away, the chair in the middle of the pool. That's when I hear Nathan, because when I do my walkout, I'm sort of thinking about it to get it right, because I've rushed it sometimes before and I didn't, wasn't really a fan of how it looked. So I need to make sure it's like a show. I need to get it right. And then, I walk into the chair after the walkout, and that's when I heard Nathan. I definitely think it was Nathan. I know what his voice is sound like, but Nathan seems to think that I'm lying because he was 100 meters away, and he's trying to think, how can he actually hear me? But I just heard him and did somehow out of 18,000 people. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool.
Oh, it's insane. So you'd already done the writing in the history books, and then you heard him, and that. So there's two things that you've got now, which leaves you very calm in the starting blocks.
Yeah, just before the 800 freestyle, yeah. I mean, I was already, like, calm. Do you know what I didn't even realise? So the Irish official, Gary Soups, was also on my lane, like, doing the officiating. And I didn't even realise he was, because I was just so zoned in that I completely didn't see anybody, honestly. Like, I wouldn't even be able to tell you anybody in the crowd or what anybody looked like. I was just so zoned in. It may have looked like I was looking at everybody, but honestly, I can't even remember. When I was in the zone, I just didn't even focus on anything apart from getting to that block and getting my clothes off ready to jump in.
In the 1500, you talked about going out and trying to stay close to one of the other swimmers in the lane beside you. And then eventually, quite late on, you look over and you see somebody a good bit ahead of you and you go, oh, this is going to be very painful now. In the 800, how familiar are you with where everybody else is? Like, what do you know about how fast the Italian and Fink have gone out?
Yeah, I know everybody's race strategies. I do my homework. It's like going into any other race and ensuring competitors do it. They want to know what the competitors do. And I know exactly every person on those eight lanes. I know exactly what they're going to do. And I feel like I'm probably the most unpredictable racer, because most people swim the same tactic every time. And every time I race, I swim a new tactic. Like, it's never the same thing. I'm not going to lie. Like, we used to do the race strategies where we'd think of them before the race and then try to execute in the race. But now I don't do that. Now I just, as soon as I dive in, then I decide what I'm going to do, because you need to be, like, ready to change throughout the race. I don't want to stick to a race plan. Then it's not going to work. So I'm just adapt it as I go in the race, which I think is a sign of being a great athlete.
But you can't see, can you?
I can't see
Fink or where they are. Like, so 200 meters in, 300 meters or 400 meters in, you're kind of, it's kind of guesswork how far behind or how close you are.
In the 800, I could see everything, to be fair. Right. I knew where everybody was. I mean, I was only looking at Fink, Bobby Fink and Greg Palt, because I knew that was where the race was going to be. So I kind of, I already knew what was going to kind of plan out in that race, because they've been doing the same tactics ever since they were born, basically. So, like, I just knew exactly what they were going to try and do. So I knew exactly how far ahead to be at a certain different points in the race when I was in there, because I'd done all my research. But then in the 1500, obviously, I want to say Bobby changed his tactics, but I just think I kind of, obviously massive props to him for winning the race, but I just think I didn't execute a perfect race for myself. And I mean, that's going to happen. You're not going to be able to hit everything with perfectly. But my heats were like way better. Like, I went 14:40, I went 14:39 in the heats. But my heats, I slowed down at 1,000 metres. I reckon I could have broken the world record in the heats if I wanted to, but it was about saving energy. And it was just the way I just decided to go out to, like, I was about a second slower to our first 100 compared to the heats. So it was just like a bit of an error on my part. And then obviously Greg was kind of blocking Bobby. And then Bobby said in an interview that he was just trying to stay at the perfect distance between me and Greg, between so that Greg would block me seeing Bobby so I wouldn't notice. I mean, it worked really well for him. And I mean, that's just racing at the Olympics. It's all tactical. It's not really about time. So it was quite cool. And obviously that world record was broken, which was very special.
Yeah, I think, but it was interesting. I think definitely changed his tactics, right? Because he's renowned as a very quick finisher. But this time he used his speed early on to try and establish a lead. And like, you're obviously in their heads, I guess. That's the point that I was making earlier on about this rivalry. And that strategy is something that, like, we've had little enough as Irish sports fans to get behind in swimming for the last 20 years. And now we've got this opportunity to really key in on an American who's totally changed his strategy because of what you've done in the 800 metres.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you can look at that, but I think every athlete should be adaptable and should not be swimming the same way every time. But I mean, I thought it was a great race and I hope everybody was entertained by it. But yeah, I don't really want to say it was a great race.
I think it was brilliant. It was a brilliant week where we all got to rekindle our love of big time Olympic swimming in the pool, because it's a really special sport. And, you know, the National Swimming Strategy was released last week and you were making the point that, you know, we need more resources and, you know, you're totally happy to play that role of leadership within the sport.
Yeah, well, I feel like I've been kind of, I don't want to put this on myself or take it away from anybody else, but I feel like I'm kind of one of the leaders on the Irish swimming team and maybe in Irish sport, honestly, because I've been, over the past year, I've just been like winning everything and hopefully been through like bringing more attention to our sport. And honestly, I think swimming is like everybody's favourite sport, like underneath, you know, I mean, everybody loves to watch swimming. It's very entertaining and it's always good racing and it's very easy to watch. It's not like you're running around a 400 metre track and like you can't see certain corners of it when how far away people are. Swimming is very easy to watch because it's not too far away from anywhere where you sit. And I think that's why it's going to be, like, well, I think it actually is like the number one sport in Ireland at the moment, apart from like personal exercise, but... So we'll see what happens over there in the future, but we're going to hopefully get a lot more swimming fans and I think whatever. But I was going to say, like, so I obviously swim 400, 800, 1500, and now the 10K. I was like, in athletics terms, I don't think you ever see people do that ever. So I think maybe swimming is just a better sport in general.
I think that's coming across loud and clear. I'm interested in that bit of a chat there about what you could see in the pool, Daniel. And Gary O'Toole would often talk about the uniqueness of swimming in the sense of, you know, particularly back in his day, you're looking at the blue line up and down and there ain't no distraction, that's sort of it. And like, it's a very inward mentality, I guess. Technology, I presume, has sort of overridden a lot of that in terms of being able to listen to stuff. What are you doing the many hours that you're spending going up and down? Have you podcasts? Are you keep them out of your ears? Or yeah, what's your approach to that?
I would actually disagree with... Gary, that I would not say swimming is just about looking at the floor the whole time. Honestly, I feel like half the time I'm like, if I'm in training session, I'm chatting or I'm looking at other people to make sure I'm beating them. And the same thing in a race, I'm never looking at the bottom of the floor. I'm always, my mind is always moving and it's always rolling and always like thinking about what's going to happen next and stuff like that, and tactically and in the race and thinking about what other people are going to do. I don't think I ever am zoning out in training ever or in a race, because I just always moving. But I don't know, maybe that's just me, but I guess I'm always busy when I'm swimming.
So you don't listen to podcasts, you don't need the distraction, you're just fully engaged with what you're doing.
I don't even have music on when I swim in the pool. Honestly, we just swim in silence and chat. Like, I've never been one. Like, if I was bored in swimming and had to listen to music or a podcast, I wouldn't swim. Honestly, that would be like a turning point in my head, thinking like, well, this is really that fun that I have to distract myself with a podcast or music to what to swim, where I just like to, I'd just be around people. I've got 10 guys in my squad that I just race and it's a bit of fun.
How do you chat to people when you're swimming?
Yeah, you know, it's actually pretty easy. We're not swimming for like 2 hours straight. We have like 30 seconds on the wall each time. So everybody, we're normally like, we have like a conversation that probably could last about a minute, but stretched out for like an hour, because you touch and talking a bit on the wall, then you're pushing off and then come back to the conversation about 2 minutes later and carry on. So, I mean, all I'm doing is talking, or I'm talking to my coach or thinking about different technique. It's like you're all thinking all the time. So it's quite fun.
I don't know if it was accidentally or not, retired some of your mates from Loughborough when you were doing media ahead of the 10K. So it's going to be a different training group, I suspect, when you go back full time. Is Loughborough going to be your training base now into the future and forever, as far as you can tell?
Right now, yes. I've got another year at least, and then I guess I get to decide what to do. But I'm probably going to stay there until I finish swimming. I don't see myself moving. Maybe I'll definitely move house or something like that. But no, in terms of staying in Loughborough, I think I'll be there for the foreseeable future. And I'm sure my coach, if he's watching this, I'll be happy to hear that one. Yeah. But he already knows. So, but in terms of like, yeah, my training squad is definitely changing. We've got a lot less, but a lot of people coming in. Like all the older guys now who were 27, 28, 30s are all moved out now, seeing all the women as well. So it's just going to be me and Nathan, I guess, as top level international swimmers, and then it's going to be a lot of younger, like British and European swimmers. So you're going to, I guess, start to push me a bit on. Hopefully, I see them start making the push for medals at major champs, and I'm really looking forward to helping them out and push them on too. Because even though I was saying this yesterday on my swim clinics, like, so when we train, obviously I'm quite a bit faster than everybody now. We say about 40 seconds or maybe a bit more on the 1500 PBs. But everybody finds their own, as everybody's good at something or not very good at something else. So I find different areas where they can push me, even though they're slower. I still lose reps to them because, I mean, all they want to do is try and beat me, and all I want to do is try and beat them. So it's always like a bit good race all around. But I'm looking forward to getting some new people in and new people to push me on and stuff like that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Do you have an off season?
Yeah. So, well, normally on a normal swimming year, I would get a week off in the summer. But this year, I'm lucky that I get, I'm pretty much taking 2 months total from when the Olympics actually finished. But I would personally not say it's 2 months. I would say I get a month because I've done now 3 weeks of media, basically, where I've come back from the Olympics and I just every day I've had to do something. Where I've been constantly busy. So now I'm going to go on holiday and actually like just decompress, take everything in with my friends and just have a lot of fun and go party, because I know I said that in my interview after the open water, but sadly it didn't happen. So now I get to start.
And sorry, then you'll come back and train at the same level of intensity that you kind of train all year round, or does it, I know you taper.
So obviously we taper into competitions, so you're getting down meters anyway. So normally when you start a new season, like when I take a week off, I still have to start quite low mileage, because if I go straight back into the 8Ks that I was doing before, I'm going to end up getting injured because I haven't touched the water. And if I don't touch the water within a week, I just kind of like my shoulders kind of get used to not moving as much. So then I just get used to them moving. So when I come back in October, I'm going to have to start building up the meters. So it'll probably take me about 2 weeks to get up to normal training volumes and then push on from there. But our December phase, our like phase of swimming from normally September to December, is normally we don't go above about a 165 heart rate in sessions. It's just more about building the aerobic base. And then after January and onwards, we push it on to get into near max heart rates. So this December, obviously I have 2 months training before World Short Course Championships. So I'm going to try and win that one, because I've already got the European Championships long course and the World Short Course Championships to win. And then I've won everything. And then I added in the Commonwealth Games, but obviously not a lot of people can do that one. So it's not really a major championships, but I count it. So
fair enough.
That'll be the last one to win, I guess.
What is max heart rate?
For me, so I actually found this out recently, but so when I'm, since I swim horizontally, it's a lot harder to get your heart rate to a max level, where doing vertical exercises, your heart rate goes a lot higher, which I only recently found out, but mine would get around just 200, I would say.
Right.
And I could, it would constantly be around 190 to 200 in about a, how long do our sets take? About 45 minutes. So it would be at around that level for 45 minutes.
Oh my God. Right. And so are you wearing GPS in the pool when you're finding that out, or how do you know?
We have these like small little monitors that just go in the side of your cap.
Right.
And then they link to the app. And actually, I'm making a, well, I don't want to actually maybe say that, but my final year project in uni this year is I'm making an app to link all the monitors together for our training sessions. And you can put them on the TV and you can display them, stuff like that. So.
All right. Well, that sounds like a great business opportunity as a sideline slash nixer for you when you're winning world titles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I am a programmer behind the scenes. That's what I do as my degree. So I'll be making some apps and that'll be pretty cool.
Do you find it's important to have stuff going on in your life that isn't swimming? That isn't, I mean, obviously it sounds like you're using your programming experience to help your swimming, but do you know what I mean? That isn't like, okay, I'm now obsessing about what Bobby Fink or whoever is actually doing today, that there's another side of your brain that's active.
Well, when I'm not swimming, I'm not thinking about swimming. Like, to be honest, a lot of the time I'm playing like PlayStation or I don't know, doing stuff with my teammates. Or to be fair, we normally just play PlayStation because all my teammates play PlayStation, so we're all on like playing together. So when we're not training, when we're not with each other in training, we're with each other online on the PlayStation. So we're actually kind of talking the whole day. But in terms of like college and university and stuff like that, well, it is a great distraction, but personally, I'd rather not have it as a distraction. It's quite hard. So when I finish my university, I'll be quite happily be sitting at home and sitting on a sofa instead of turning up to lectures and doing all the work and revision. But we've only got one more year, so I'll happily have a distraction for one more year, and then I can become a nice professional athlete, and that'll be great.
Fair enough. Last one for you. Was there anything that was surprising about becoming an Olympic champion that you're like, ooh, I did not expect this? This was, you know, while I had visualized winning and the anthem and the podium and the bits that come after, was there stuff that you're like, I didn't quite expect this?
To be fair, I actually think it's not as what I expected in terms of I thought it'd be better. Maybe I like assumed that becoming Olympic champion, it'd be like you're like the president. That's what I would have expected it to be. But in terms, like, I guess it was after the race, it feels really good. You don't really know what to think. Like I struggle, right? Because my best friends all well, I could say to me, "Oh, do you not wake up and just think, damn, I'm an Olympic champion?" And I was like, "No, I don't." To be honest, half the time I don't even. Sometimes like, I forget. I like don't, it doesn't even bother me. I just like it shouldn't really define myself that I'm Olympic champion. I like to be. I'm just Daniel Whiffen, casual swimmer who sometimes wins some medals and is very nice and people can talk to you all the time. That's how I want to be. And I mean, the Olympic champion's great. But honestly, I thought there'd be more sponsorship opportunities with it. But we are already like post Olympics now, so. Apparently they start rolling in very soon, but I thought in terms of the sponsorship side, though, I think I was thinking like massive sponsors would be rolling in, but maybe they are. I just haven't heard from them
yet. I think they will be. I'm sure they will be, because anybody who's come across you thinks it's just a winning personality. Basically, what you're describing here is Clark Kent forgetting he's Superman.
Yeah, well, apparently Noah Lyles did an interview after the 100 meters saying that I'm the Clark Kent of swimming. And then everyone tell me about how I'm bringing about the nerdy look with glasses, but I was just like, well, I just can't see. It's not my fault to wear glasses. But yeah, so maybe I'm the Clark Kent. I've dressed up as him for Halloween before, so maybe it's going to come true. Something maybe I'll turn into Superman at some point, or maybe I am Superman. I think that's what they're actually implying. I don't know, when I swim, I'm Superman.
Exactly. So. Yeah. No, that's exactly it. Your YouTube channel, if everybody wants to keep up, are you going to be putting stuff up from your holidays, or is that being shut down for the next month?
No. I've scheduled videos for when I'm away anyway. So right now we're doing post-Olympic stuff. So yesterday I just put out a podcast with me and Nathan talking about the whole Olympic experience. So you want to hear some juice of what actually happens at the Olympics, then that's it. And then the next two videos coming out are going to be race analysis. This is where I'll go through and tell you exactly what I'm thinking during the race. And then the holiday videos will be coming out. I don't know if I can film everything because some of it's probably not safe for YouTube.
There you go.
And I don't probably want to promote it with younger children. But it'll be fun. And you'll see what Olympic champion does on the holidays, I guess.
There you go. Have you got the tattoo? You must have the tattoo from Tokyo, did you?
Yeah, I saw, if you can see that, I've still got the tattoo there on the forearm, but I need to, this week, I think on Friday, I'm getting the Paris 2024 out of dinner, and I'm going to get some other little things, because I actually don't really like tattoos, you know, so it's actually weird, because I have a couple, but I think they look cool when you swim, so as long as I'm swimming, I'm going to probably get some tattoos, but I don't know what I'm going to do after I finish, because I might get some of them removed. But I just think they look cool when I'm swimming in the water and you can see them. And some of them, like, I've got Dream Big on my arm, like here.
Oh, yeah.
And I think when I'm doing my over-top recovery stroke, that seems to look, I think it looks really cool. So and my parents actually were like, oh, I don't want you to get that. But then they're telling me that they actually really like it because when I swim, it looks really cool when I'm swimming. But stuff like that, I mean, I just do stuff like so a lot of my tattoos have meanings and stuff like that, and like the Olympic rings, I mean, I was saying this to my best friend last night, I was like, they just get free advertising all the time, honestly, on athletes just getting their logo tattooed on people. But it's just like, because everybody works so hard to get there, like it's just like a thing that everybody gets to like show that they how hard they can work and stuff like that. And then I think that's a great meaning behind the Olympic tattoo.
You've been great with your time. I just, when you brought up your parents there, I should really ask about them. The swimming parents, they have it hard because they've got to get up very early in the morning to drop the kids to training.
Yeah, it's a hard life being a swimming parent. I don't know if I want my children to swim if I eventually have any, but I feel like it is a hard life. You kind of have to take, they kind of have to be quite, what's the opposite of being selfish? I don't know. That,
selfless.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, selfless. Because they have to like basically allow their child will then take up their whole life, you know what I mean? And I mean, maybe that's just being part of a parent, but I mean, my parents were getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, waking me up and then bringing me to swim practice ever since I was like 7 years old. Well, I doubt I was going 4 a.m. when I was 7 years old, but maybe around 12, I was starting to really do the early mornings. And so they've done like a decade of early morning driving. And I mean, they're the reason why I'm winning today. They pushed me, and to be honest, I would say that they're great parents because they don't get involved. I think great parents are the ones who let the coach do what the coach knows what to do, and I feel like they're quite good at that. So massive props to them. And I saw their video of their reaction off the ball, so it was pretty cool. And it's nice that all the media can capture these moments, and then I can look back at them. So it's very nice.
Daniel, you've been great. Congratulations, and enjoy your month off. I'd say it's going to be the greatest month of your life. Well deserved. Cheers.
Thank you very much for having me. It was great to be on.